2006.
Yes.
Okay, the first question that we ask is, World War II started in 1939, and we entered in 1941. Mm-hmm. Do you have any memory of the war, Pearl Harbor, where you were, what people thought, what you thought?
Yes, I remember December the 7th, 1941, and I was just a teenager back in those days. I was working at a lumber mill in Missouri.
Okay.
And I was cutting logs in the lumber mill, and one of the guys that had a friend that lived close by, he'd heard it over the radio, and mm-hmm. so he came out to the lumber mill and told everybody that Pearl Harbor had been bombed, and that we would probably be in a war
okay.
right away, and we sure were.
And do you remember if you thought about that you might be going to the service or anything?
I thought about it, but everybody assured me, no, it won't last that long. You won't be in the war, but I was, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you would have been about?
Well, let's see. I didn't go to war until 1944.
Okay, right when it was, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, do you remember what people's attitude was toward the war? Was everyone in favor of us?
Yes, we were, the war was brought on us. You know, mm-hmm. it was brought on us. And so there wasn't anything we could do about it but just go and defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people that I knew thought, well, I'll have to go to war. And then some of them said, well, I'm not going to go. And the government come out at that time, and they wanted need metal, you know, and so they wanted all old cars that wasn't in running shape or pretty bad old cars, that wanted them to turn them into the government so they could melt them down and make armor for mm-hmm. the military. And I remember one of my friends says, well, he said, I can't keep them taking me, so he said, they can have my car too if they want me, so mm-hmm. won't they? So.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave his car, and he went to war too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now you were registered.
Yes.
In Missouri.
No.
Oh, by that
I was not. By that time, I'd came to Kansas for harvest.
Okay.
And I stayed out here, and okay. I was registered out here in Gray County.
All right. So you were around Cimarron then.
Montezuma. Yeah.
That's okay.
Where I was then. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you came out to work the harvest to relatives or friends or?
Well, just. For V.D. Thomas down at Montezuma.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have a friend that worked for him, and he told me that I could work also if I'd come out. And so that's what I'd done. I came out and worked for him.
Okay.
And I stayed out here, and I've been out here in Kansas ever since.
Okay. And so you worked for him up until the time then that you were drafted?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I worked for him. Yeah, time and this, I was drafted.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And you were drafted, you said, in 44?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In the Army?
Yes,
okay.
In the Army.
Mm-hmm. And where did you take your physical? Where were you inducted?
I took my physical at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down on a train and took my physical, and then I came back, and I was back a short time. I don't know, just don't remember exactly what time, but it's probably, I'd say, a couple of weeks or something like that until they called me and said that I need to report to Fort Leavenworth for the Army.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down, if I recall right, I think that's whenever I went down to stay then.
Mm-hmm.
It's Fort Raleigh. But
now, were you married then?
No, I wasn't married, but I was engaged then. So
okay.
My wife and I were engaged. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yeah. Where did you go to basic training?
I went to Fort Hood, Texas.
Okay.
Now, at that time, it was Camp Hood, Texas, but
mm-hmm.
they've changed it to Fort Hood, Texas now. But I stayed in Fort Leavenworth for, I suppose, probably a week or so, and then we all went on a troop train to Fort Hood, Texas.
Now, were there anyone that you knew in that group?
Lester Brand.
from
north of Sermon, lived north of Sermon on a farm up there. He farmed up there.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I knew him, and he went right along with me.
Okay.
And we went down there.
Can you describe basic training?
Well, basic training was it's kind of tough, I thought, but you know, you'd go out in all kinds of weather. It didn't matter what the weather was. You went out basic training, and of course, it was cold. It got winter time. It was cold down there, and I was used to a dry climate, and down there the humidity was high.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I tell you, it was really cold for me. And so I'd put on all the clothes that I could, you know, to go out for basic training. But we'd go out, and it would rain quite a bit. And yes, I took my training with the anti-tank company with the 105, 155 howitzers. And
so, what did you learn then?
Well, I learned all kinds of combat with them, and with the rifles. We had to take our rifles apart and clean our rifles, and learn first aid also with goes along with that. And we crawled under barbed wire, you know, with guns shooting over us, you know, and they tell us that, you know, if you raise up, you know, you're liable to get shot, you know. But well, I didn't know it, but at the time they had bars that them machine guns that are shooting over us, they couldn't go but so low, you know. But anyway, you didn't dare raise your head up, you know, you just crawled along in that mud, you know, under them barbed bars. So,
mm-hmm.
But that was part of our training. But I took it real serious. I did. I thought that that might save my life someday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was right.
Was it hard physical work?
Yes, it was. It was hard physical work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd done a lot of hard work, but I'd never done strenuous work like that was. It was pretty rough.
And, mm-hmm. And was it difficult to live in a barracks with other young men, and were the other young men from all over the United States, or?
No, it wasn't so bad for me. We had some Japanese in our barracks with us. They were American Japanese, you know, that came from California, took a train with us, and they spoke a broken language in a way that I had the trouble understanding, but it wasn't difficult for me because I would always I grew up in a community where everybody was friends, you know, mm-hmm. And we all, if wasn't friends, we made friends, you know, and so it was easy for me to, you know, to have friends and associate with people in our barracks, where they had advantage over me that I'm a country boy, you know, and they always wanted to go to town. I had no need to go to town. I didn't want to go to town.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed in at camp most of the time, you know, stayed in barracks, and I'd go to the PX, and that was about where I'd do all through my training, to just go to PX.
Mm-hmm.
But
how long was basic training?
Basic training was 13 weeks.
13 weeks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And did, was it hard to take orders?
No, it wasn't for me.
Okay.
But I do know of some of the fellows that was in my ward, it was tough for them to take orders.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it wasn't. I didn't mind it one bit. So.
What was the food like? What was it like being away from home?
Well, it wasn't too bad. Being away from home wasn't bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the food wasn't too bad, but it just seemed like that I couldn't get enough of it. You know, I was physically working, and I was hungry most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I go to PX, I would buy some candy bars or cookies or something that I'd bring home and put in my footlocker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd always have something to eat. But
now, were you getting paid?
Yes, I was getting paid. I getting paid $52.50 a month.
$52.50.
Yes, $52.50.
And you really didn't have anything that you had to buy. I mean, the Army furnished you with clothes and food and...
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that I really had to buy except, well, I did, you had to buy your shaving cream and a tonic, you know, that you face lotion and hair oil back in those days, that's hair, what we call hair oil, you know,
mm-hmm.
we put on our hair. few personal items like that. That's about the only thing we had to buy. The Army furnished about everything else.
Okay, and did you have to take care of your own clothes?
Yes, we did take care of our own clothes.
With the washing and...
Yes, with the washing. They had a washroom on campus at that time that you could go down to the wash and wash your clothes and dry them and bring them back and because they were easy to press back in those days, you could just stretch them out before they got completely dry and then they'd just dry stiff, you might say, almost. So we liked that and our clothes stayed pretty nice most of the time.
Okay. And, is there any particular person that you remember from basic training or any particular story?
Well, from basic training, Lester Rand is the only person that I really knew, but he wasn't in the same outfit that I was in, but Fort Hood, Texas is a big place, you know, and so he was in another part of it. And at that time, they had North Fort Hood and South Fort Hood. And so there wasn't anybody that I can remember in my training at all.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to come back to Kansas or go home during that 13 weeks?
No. After the training was over, I had a delay en route for 10 days before I went to Fort Ord, California. Mm-hmm. And I got to come back to Kansas, and then I went back to Missouri to see my folks, and then I came back here, left from here to Fort Ord, California.
Okay. And when you were in Fort Ord?
I was in Fort Ord for a short time. They issued us our overseas clothes that we was going to take overseas. And they give us some training there. They wanted to know if you could swim, you know. And they took us out to the end of the swimming pool. And if you could swim, you jumped off. And if you couldn't swim, they pushed you off.
Oh, my gosh. And you learned to swim.
Those that couldn't swim, after they went under about three times, well, then they'd pull them out. But they made sure that they couldn't swim before. They're just not saying they can't swim. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you could swim, then you swam the length of that swimming pool. And then that was on your record that you could swim.
Okay, and could you swim? Did you know how?
I could swim, but I wasn't a good swimmer. I could stay afloat anyway and go that far. So
they did that? Why?
Well, if a ship goes down, you've got to be able to swim far enough away from that ship for a lifeboat. Because they drop them lifeboats just right now, and then you jump off of those lifeboats, off of the big ship, you know. And then you swim to them lifeboats because them lifeboats will start floating out.
Right.
And if you're not out far enough away from them ship, that ship sinks, it'll pull you right down under. Mm-hmm. And there's no way you can ever come up with those ships.
Right. So when you were in Fort Ord, you knew that you were going into the Pacific?
Yes, I knew I was going to the Pacific, yeah.
Okay. And did you know what you would be doing?
No, I didn't know what I'd be doing. I just knew I was going to be going overseas.
Okay.
Yeah. And we went to Washington, state of Washington, let's see, what was the name of that camp in Washington that I went to?
For further training?
Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, Vancouver, Washington is where I went to. Went to Vancouver, Washington, and we were there, stayed there until enough people could gather there for a shipload. It was about, I don't know how many thousand, I say probably about... I can't remember for sure. It must have been at least 2,000 of us or so on a ship that went over. Mm-hmm. And that's where we loaded out at Portland, Oregon then. And so they marched us from Vancouver, Washington to Portland, Oregon.
How far is that?
It's only about 3 miles.
Come on.
Just kind of across the Columbia River, you might say, from one side of the Columbia River to the other, across a bridge there, and a short distance there. And we left there and went down the Columbia River, and it was pretty rough. A lot of the boys got seasick whenever they're going down that Columbia River.
Mm-hmm. And were you on your ship at that point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I was on the ship at that point.
And what was the name of the ship?
Well, I do not know the name of the ship. That was one mistake I made, is not keeping very good records of the names of the ship that I was on, you know. And I wished many a time that I had done that, but I didn't. But we went from there to Hawaii.
Okay.
And we spent 21 days in Hawaii, 3 weeks. They taught us in Hawaii how to live off the jungle, how to survive, you know, mm-hmm. what we could drink and what we could eat. And then we had, they also taught us how to use hand grenades there okay. also, because them cliffs are straight down, we could throw a hand grenade and drop it off. And if you have to get used to that, because if you don't, you'll get scared, you'll freeze up, you know, with that hand grenade, and it may go off in your hand if you turn loose that lever and can't turn loose of the hand grenade. And so it was just right close. You could drop it off a cliff there, you know, and that hand grenade wouldn't hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. So we did take that training there, too.
Do you remember any specifics about drinking the water or what you could eat?
Well, you could use drinking water was something else. We could use coconut, drink water to get fluid from that. And then we could use our poncho to catch water in our helmets if we had to, you know, to put up in case of rain, we would drain into our helmet and use water for that, drinking water. But as far as the things to eat, I never could comprehend all that stuff that you eat. You know, there's a lot of roots and leaves and things like that that you could eat to survive on. But they showed us some of it as real poison, you know, and you just eat that stuff and it poisoned you, you know, just right away. And I was always scared that that's what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I never had to use it. But okay. I was sure glad I didn't have to, because mm-hmm. I probably could never survive anyway. But never had to use it. So we left there after 21 days. And while I was there, my cousin had been in the Army quite a while before I had, and he was there in Hawaii, and I got to meet him.
Did you know he was there?
Yes, I knew he was there, but I didn't think about getting to meet him, you know, because I wasn't only there a short time, and they kept us real busy. We didn't have time to do any going to the beach or loafing around or anything. I went to the barbershop to get a haircut, and he was a barber in the barbershop, so he cut my hair.
Yeah. Okay, so where did you go after Hawaii?
I went to Saipan.
Okay.
And we got it there in Saipan, and they just finished the war in Saipan, so we stayed there for a few days, and then we loaded back on a ship, and they said there wasn't anything for us to do there, so we went from there to Okinawa,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I put my military training into use. That's where I...
Because there was still fighting
there.
Yeah,
they were still fighting on Okinawa.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about they unloaded you and...
Yes, they unloaded us, and we went to a camp, just put up a tent, you know, spent the night there. The next day, the company that needed the men, they come back and they said, I want 50 men, and another company commander said, I want so many men for his company, and somebody else wants 40 or 50 or whatever the case may be, and so we split off with them.
Mm-hmm.
And this company commander said to me, he wanted me. And he said, I want you to be a machine gunner. I said, I don't know anything about a machine gunner, you know. I don't want to be one. He said, I'll come. I said, well, I've heard that Japanese are rough on machine gunners, that machine gunners don't last very long. And he said, well, you will be a machine gunner. So nothing I could do, you know, but be a machine gunner.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever he said that, he paused for a minute, and he said, well, if you live 3 days, you got a good chance of making it, you know. So that always kind of stuck in my mind, whether I'm going to live 3 days or not, you know. But so the next day, or that day, we went up past the artillery line, and we stayed between the front line and the artillery. And we slept overnight there. And if you have those guns shooting over your head all night long, you don't get any sleep, you know. So that was quite an experience there, but it didn't make any difference. I guess we were ready to go the next morning, so we got up to go up on the lines to fight then the next day.
So what were you thinking as you moved up?
It was all kind of a dream to me when I think back now. And back then, I thought, well, you know, I'm not in this alone.
Mm-hmm.
I've got these guys with me, you know, and I guess it's the right thing to do, because everybody's doing the same thing, you know. We're in there to protect one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so they give us some words of advice then. They said, well, no one leaves the front line. once you get up there, he said, nobody leaves. He said, you don't run back. He said, if you go back, you may get shot in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be by your own people because you're deserting them, you see. And so I got my machine gun and we went up, and so we got up there in time. It kind of dug in the first night, you know. That was a terrible experience for me because I didn't know what to do with my machine gun, but I was sitting right on the side of the road, and this guy, he told me, and I said, you don't let no one come down that road. No one after dark come down that road, whatever you do. Well, I was on one side of the road, and there's some other guys on the other side of the road, but they were kind of behind a bank, and I was where I could see right down the road real good. So there was two of us. I was a machine gunner, and my assistant machine gunner was in with me. And then I had three ammunition barriers that carried ammunition to my machine gun. And my assistant machine gunner, well, he would take over part of the time and shoot whenever I wouldn't get tired or whatever. But we were sitting there and getting ready for dark to come, you know. And it kind of began to sprinkle just a little bit of rain, and it was pretty dark. But every once in a while, a flare would—they'd shoot flares up, it would come down with a parachute, and they would put out a bright light. You know, you could see real good, and that kept the enemy so that we could see them. They would attack us at night, and we would attack them in daytime. That's the way we fought during over there. And so they just got through shooting off a flare or two, I was on guard. I told him, you sleep, and I'll take from now to 12, and then he could take from 12 to daylight, you know. And so I don't know what time it was. It must have been about 11, 12 o'clock, or 11 o'clock anyway, before 12. There was three Japanese coming right down that road. And I didn't have my machine gun set up for that direction. I had set up for the side view on this other side, so I couldn't shoot my machine gun, but I had a carbine, shoots 15 rounds, and first thing I knew, they were just up there fairly close, you know, it's from the dark, and so I raised up my carbine, and I just froze on that thing, and 15 rounds went off before I could even release the trigger. I just froze on that thing, and I guess I was scared I was going to have to shoot somebody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I better not let them get by me, because I'd be in trouble there if I did. So anyway, I shot off 15 rounds, but I didn't kill anybody. But then I wounded one guy, and he dropped his rifle in the wind, and they drug him back a short distance, got him back in the cave there. But that was a frightening experience for me. And then we went back, dug in on a different angle the next day, and we just dig in the daytime and kind of set put, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for the getting ready to dig our foxholes, you know, so we'd stay there. And we'd go up and then do some fighting, then we'd come back to them foxholes. Of course, the longer we stayed in those foxholes, the deeper they got.
Yeah.
But it was quite an experience. And
did you think at the time that you were poorly trained?
No, I never thought of the time I was poorly trained at all.
Okay. But with the machine gun.
Oh, well, after I shot that carbine, I decided, I don't want that. I want an M1 rifle.
Mm-hmm.
So I traded my carbine for an M1 rifle. And that was my weapon that I used, that
okay.
M1. The only time I used a machine gun is whenever a bunch would ever attack me, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But that M1 rifle was my best deal. And I had that machine gun set up the very next day. We moved out and went around up on the hill, and I set that machine gun up. And so we was flushing some Japanese out of a cave, you know. And so I was shooting at them with my machine gun. And they located me then with that machine gun. And they would go after that machine gun. It don't matter how many they'd lose to get rid of a machine gunner, you know. And I knew that before I even went up there. But I was pinned down in a hole for a long time there. And it was terrible thought come through my mind then, because I was kind of left alone then, because everybody else that was beginning to move back, because it was getting late in the afternoon, you know, and if you don't get back to your foxhole before dark, well, you just don't get back. You don't move after dark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you get shot any time, but you move after dark. So I was pinned down in this shell hole, and didn't know what to do. Every time I'd raise my head up, they'd shoot at me, you know. And so I, just being a young kid, I was nervous, and so I cried quite a bit, you know. And after a while, I decided, well, this is not going to work. So I don't recall ever, being a kid, ever being in a position where I had to pray, you know, to the Lord for anything. But I finally decided, well, that's the only thing I'm going to do. That's the next thing, best thing I can do. So I did, and I promised the Lord that if he'd get me out of this place, you know, I'd try to do the best I could, change my life around. And so I sat there for a while, and something just told me to get up and run, you know, get up and run. And I was a little leery because I finally said, well, I'm going to. So I did. I just got up, took machine gun, and run. And I had to run about 150 yards, I guess, before I could drop off behind the bank to get out of. And I never heard a shot fired. There wasn't a shot fired. And when some of our guys were already back there behind that bank, I asked them if anybody was shooting at me while I was running down through there. And they said, no, they didn't hear anybody shoot at me. So I never did tell them anything about what mm-hmm. how I felt or anything. But
why didn't they come and help you?
Well, we were all trying to get back, mm-hmm. you know, and the thing about it is, I'm a machine gunner supposed to cover while those guys get back.
Oh.
And then, of course, I didn't have anybody cover for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the last one to leave, you see, so I had to get back.
Mm-hmm.
But we were, and also I was covering for the wounded guys. The guys that were wounded, they had to get back, and they had to bring what we call a half track up, and they loaded the wounded guys on that half track, and the dead guys, whatever, you couldn't tell for sure whether dead or wounded when they had them loaded on that. They loaded about, well, I suppose, between 12 and 15 of them on that half track, and I could see them down below me as on the a road that went down there. I could see them go by while I was up there machine gun, and they'd come up and pick up a few more. And after I got back behind that bank, one of the guys that, I don't know his name, but he was from Nebraska. And there's always got to be a clown in the bunch anyway, you know. He said, we was talking about, well, there goes some so-and-so. He must have got wounded or killed. We didn't know, you know. And he said, well, he said, I'm going back because I got a round-trip ticket before I left, he said. Everybody just kind of laughed, you know. But we went on back and went round to our foxholes where we had dug in and everything. We just got there. He was standing up in his foxhole, pulling his pack off, and they shot him right through both lungs. Yeah.
Oh,
and
dear.
That was a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about it was, I knew him real well, you know. I knew of him real well anyway. And so that really shook me up. But
you had to grow up fast.
That was the second day. Mm. So I thought, well, I got one more day to live.
When you said that you had heard that the Japanese were hard on machine gunners, did you hear that from soldiers who had been there?
Yes. My cousin in Hawaii that cut my hair, mm-hmm. the soldiers that come back from there told him that they were. That's
okay.
What. And he told me. Said, don't be a machine gunner.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese are really go after those machine gunners.
Okay.
So that's the reason I didn't want to be one.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. But, so you evidently survived the third day.
I survived the third day.
So how long were you there then? And
I was there. I fought for 13 days.
Okay.
Yeah. That's and I have to admit that I had some awful close calls, but mm-hmm. I was a good shot. I was an expert rifleman
mm-hmm.
in my training, but I grew up shooting squirrels,
yeah.
you know, back in Missouri whenever mm-hmm. I was a kid. And that's what saved my life, mm-hmm. being a good shot. But
so at the end of the 13 days, had you cleared out what you were?
Yes, at the end of the 13 days, the last 2 days up there, whenever I was in the, we were moving up to the last point. The Marines were coming up from the other side, and we were coming up from this side. When we were taking it, there was caves on both sides, and so we were going up, and I was covering in those caves with my machine gun. All my outfit went up, and I decided that after they all got up there, then I was supposed to move up. Well, nobody in those caves, nobody behind me to cover for me, you see. I was always a cover guy. Yeah. And so I said, well, my tripod, I can't carry that, and my rifle and my